Welcome to the Unseen Magic Podcast. I'm your host, Jen Morse, holistic business coach, spiritual mentor, modern mystic, and artist. In this podcast, we explore all things mysticism, creativity, spirituality, and entrepreneurship, bridging the spiritual and the practical. So excited to have you here, and I'll see you in the show. Hi guys, welcome. I'm so excited about today. Today's guest is Irene Morales, who is a comedian and a creative based in New York City, also a dear friend, and I'm really excited to have this conversation with you. I've been looking forward to it for a long time, so thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, girl. This is so nice. I'm so proud you're doing it.
Yes. Okay, so also Irene was a very pivotal figure in me starting this podcast. And I am very grateful because she's like, you know what? Let me just get on the phone with you. Let's just talk about this. Let me just show you how you can get started. And just with that, that enthusiasm and support, I was like, okay. I could see it laid out very practically. And I was like, I can do this. Yeah. Like I can do this and I can do it soon. I don't have to wait another 2 years, you know? So thank you for that.
Yeah, you got it. You're so great at it. Like your energy is so welcoming and intimate that it's like perfect for podcasts.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Well, you also host a podcast. So if you want to tell us a little bit about that, your other projects that you're working on.
I do. My podcast is on hiatus, but I think doing this podcast with you now will help me. Like it's the fire under my ass. Oh, mm-hmm. Can I say bad words?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right. Even though I don't think ass is bad, but I just, okay. My podcast is called Dear Nana, Advice from an Idiot, just because I kind of refer to myself as Nana, and I interview friends, mostly comedians, but also my friend who's a chef. I have a friend who's a priest, and I just ask them what the best piece of advice they've ever been given is, because I'm fascinated with what makes people tick and how any kind of way to be more efficient and successful, fascinates me.
Yeah.
So that's the podcast, but I you're so consistent that you're constantly an inspiration of like, oh God, you're just always like doing it.
Thank you.
Yeah, truly. I want to be more like you, Jen.
Oh my gosh. If you're watching the video, you'll see my blushing, but otherwise you won't. I'll just tell you.
I told Jen to prepare for this before we started recording. I'm like, get ready to be embarrassed for an hour or however long we record.
So Irene, you are a comedian, which is, I mean, that's not an easy gig. This is a really, I am fascinated by this. I think comedy is such a connector and such an access point for connection across like so many people and so many backgrounds and genres. And, you know, I really admire the art of comedy, and I'm excited to talk to you a little more about that and like your connection to comedy and where that started and where that came from for you.
It's funny that you bring up connection, because whenever people ask me, that's my favorite part. Is that mm-hmm. connection with the audience. Is I say something silly and they laugh and I'm like, oh, cool. You know what I mean? Or well, obviously they laugh, but that feeling of like, oh my God, me too. Mm-hmm. And the laughter is the recognition of that. And I like helping people feel less alone.
Yeah.
So if I say something silly and you laugh and you feel less alone, then mission accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've always been attracted to that ever since I was little. I think now as an adult, I can kind of understand why I'm doing, you know, when I was little, I was just like, oh, this is the best. You know, if you say something funny and everybody laughs, like there's nothing better. Right. And so I think I learned that from an early age. I used to watch this old program on the BBC called Are You Being Served? With my grandfather, which it basically just takes place in a department store. And they were just so dry and ridiculous. And I'm like, this is the best, you know, and then just Mr. Bean. And I just kind of grew up in SNL and like all these things. And I also loved like just reading comics. Grease and well, I know Grease is a movie, but the Betty and Veronica comics is like how I learned English. And my grandfather would always bring them home. So even though he and I didn't speak a lot, we connected so much through comedy. That'll just always be dear to me. But regarding stand-up, I started writing stand-up style jokes when I was like 14. Oh, just about like the neighbors upstairs and whatever weird little observations I came across. But then I, my first stand-up show didn't happen till I was 21. I did stand up in Miami for about 7 years. And then at 28, I finally got the nerve and the universe kind of like lined up a couple of things where I was able to move to New York. Mm-hmm. And I've actually been in New York for 7 years. Mm-hmm. So all these like groovy seven numbers.
Yes.
But yeah, I think I answered your question.
Yeah.
Keep me square. I'm drinking.
Yeah. I'm curious about like, okay, when you were growing up, like I know you had that experience with your grandfather and like, I want to know like when you were little, like did you have a propensity to want to make people laugh? Or did that kind of come later as like a skill?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I got picked on a lot when I was little. Mm-hmm. So I think I used like, I clinged on to humor, or I used it as like a diffuser. I used it on myself to make me feel better. And then I would also kind of, this is, I grew up in Miami and I was kind of like the chunky friend. Mm-hmm. So I very quickly at an early age had to be like, I mean, I have jokes about it now, but I was like the funny friend with personality because I was a little bit chunky in Miami. So I think humor helped me in a lot of ways. And then, yeah, I don't think it was till I got older, like in, I think like middle school and definitely high school, I would like make people laugh and I was like, oh, this is the best. And I'm sure when I was little too, I mean, I'm sad that I don't have like a defining moment of being five and like making everyone laugh and like, this is the best, which so many comedians have. But I think it's just because it was like a constant realization. And like every time, you know, and it would get deeper and deeper every time. And it's not until people ask me questions like this, that I'm like, oh yeah, like it's, I mean, now I've been asked it. So I know it's like, oh yeah, it's that connection with people. That's what I love.
Yeah.
And I'm like, am I answering your question? I hope so.
You are. This is just like, this is a fluid conversation, baby. You are not on stage. We are chilling.
No, I know. Yeah. Thank you. You're a queen.
You know, what's coming up is like, I think it'd be good to go there. Which is I like for me personally, as a youth, like I used art as the coping mechanism, right? Like as the coping mechanism for ultimately being a very highly sensitive person, like someone who really deeply was empathetic and cared a lot and was still developing as a human. So didn't really understand, you know, how to navigate the world, as my own entity. And so it's interesting to hear, you know, like you were saying, like you got picked on or like you were the chunky one, for instance, in your words, like, and to use humor to, like the entry point for humor or art in many ways can come from a pain point, you know?
Yeah.
And I, you know, like it's so interesting because that's it's a beautiful like metaphor of transformation, because the skill kind of comes into you as a coping mechanism. And then, but now it actually is a way of connection, right? Like now it is a way to help others like avoid the pain that maybe you had to go through, or any creative, you know?
Isn't that true for most trauma though, that the trauma defines us and that it helps us connect with other people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I still can't get over Wisdom of Trauma. Like, I love it. I took notes.
Also, yeah, PSA, anyone who has not watched The Wisdom of Trauma, Gabor Mate, you have got to, like, if there's anything you watch in the next 5 years, it's got to be this. Like, that's it.
My friend has, what was his book? Ghosts, Hungry Ghosts, which is so cool because he's like, oh, I have Hungry Ghosts. And I'm like, of course you have Hungry Ghosts. Very, I'm like, I'll buy a book and we can trade and blah, blah, blah. It was great. But anyway.
That is so amazing. So in terms of, you know, how you, because there's a aspect of this that's very unseen as well, which is, I know that you're also a very mystical person too. So you do blend, you know, a lot of energetics and mysticism into the life you live and the work that you do, even if it's just behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to talk about what that looks like for you.
Sure. I think the best example is, so ever since I was little, I wanted to live in New York, and I'm talking like 10 years old. I always thought, I always knew from a young age that New York was like the mecca of like theater and art, and just all the freaks were here. And then my family and I, my parents and my little brother and I took a road trip up the East Coast. And again, I must have been like 10.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to New York, and it was the only place other than Miami, where I'm from, that felt like home, which was wild. It was like a very like visceral, I'm like, oh, this is, I'm like getting goosebumps talking about it. But even at such a young age, I'm like, oh, this feels like home. This is where I need to be. But then whatever, life happened and I grew up, and like it's, my mom's a teacher and my dad sells tiles. Like, it's a pretty blue collar family. And New York is, I think, the most expensive city. I'm sure it's like New York and Tokyo.
Yeah.
So I didn't even like apply to colleges up here, because I was like, even if I get a full scholarship, it's like, I'm going to have to fly home, and how will I, I blocked it out. And then I started actively doing comedy at 21. And then when I was 28, or it must have been 27, I was like working at Neiman Marcus in Miami. And I had kind of decided earlier that year that I'm just like, fuck it, I'm going to save up and move to New York. You know, I got, like, so many people, different people kept coming into my life and telling me like, you have to move to New York, like a casting agent or a casting director, and then like a comedian who was very established, and a few others. And I was like, all right, well, I got to just like cut the bullshit and go. And then, so I told myself that in January of 2014, and I was like, I'll save up till the fall and I'll move in the fall. And then in like June of that year, I was working at Neiman Marcus, and one of the reps for Oliver Peoples called me, and he was like, if I got you a job in New York, would you move? And I was like, yeah, for sure. And he's like, I want you to work at Barney's. I love your energy. You're a beast with product knowledge. And so I, you know, instead of moving in the fall, I ended up moving July 7th, 7/7 of 2014 to New York with a job. And then I got here and I was crashing with a friend for a month. And then within that month, I was able to find an apartment that a comedian, you know, like the comedians were all like a a little beehive of like, hey, somebody needs an, you know what I mean? So like, I kind of put the feelers out. I'm like, hey, I just moved here. I need an apartment. And I moved into this like room with another comedian and this really nice girl. And the room was so small that I could only enter the bed through the front. Like, it's, and I'm still on that same bed, but it's like a full, like the room only fit a full size bed. And I had to like enter it. But, and I was paying $650 a month, which is insane. But yeah, so I had always gotten little kisses from the universe, but I think, having all those synchronicities in that year, I was like, oh, okay, this is like not some fuck shit. This is like for real.
Yeah.
But I'm still, I mean, you and I have talked about it. I'm still like doubtful and I'm still like, what the hell am I doing? But then it's nice to hear like more successful people. Like even one of my mentors in comedy who's like, oh yeah, I spoke to her stepbrother is Zach Braff. And like, he'll talk about like, oh, I didn't get invited to that party or I didn't get that role. And it's like, oh, wow. Yeah. Like everybody at every level.
Mm-hmm. Which is something we talked about the other day, which is new level, new devil. Right. And it's such like, no matter where you are, like there's such lingering effects. Like we all have, no matter who you are, we all have self-worth issues. It manifests in different ways. And that's the journey that we're on, you know, as conscious people awakening is to allow ourselves to go through the process of healing those aspects of ourselves. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because we're like this whole thing of like, imposter syndrome or comparisonitis. I forget whose term that was, but I love it. It exists even as you elevate, right? So it's interesting to know that in and of it, that feeling in and of itself is not really an indicator of success, right? And yeah, I'm actually curious what would you say, like in terms of where you are now and like the knowledge and everything that you've been through, what would you define as success, like to you?
It's funny because I told my partner the other day, I'm like, success to me will be when I can pay for my brother to have, when my brother has 24-hour care.
Mm.
And that, you know, I can pay for it through my comedy money that I've made through comedy and through acting and through all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think success is like a constant journey. So I think it would, I want to honor myself and say that I'm successful now.
Yeah,
and yeah. I think success to me is, do I have the respect of my peers? Yes. Mm. Which is so important to me. I mean, I know someone who like has a show on Showtime and gets, you know, she's featured in Vogue and all these things, but it's like, she would kill to have the friends that I have in comedy.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like wild because on paper, and don't get me wrong, I'd love to have a show on Showtime and I can't wait till Valentino just sends me purses and clothes and flies me out to Paris to go to their fashion show. But to have that, or here, a better example is in the middle of the pandemic, a feature film that I was in, we were able to get on Amazon, which was huge. And the day that it was like released on Amazon was, it's like, whoa, this is such a big deal. And who would have thought, you know, like 7 years in New York and here I am on Amazon Prime next to like Mrs. Maisel. And it's mm-hmm. for a role, you know, the role was very me. It's like, oh, I'm the funny wise ass friend in the movie. Like it's, you know, it was such a great experience, but I was alone. I was like alone in my apartment and I was like, man, this is, you know, you can have everything you want on paper, but you know, if you're still, and I don't want people to hear this and be like, oh, you need a partner, but a partner was something that I had been wanting. Mm-hmm. And now I have. So yeah, it was just wild to be like, man, you can have what you think would make you happy. And then you get it and you're like, oh, but if, again, I wanted someone to share it with. So, now I have someone and I don't have a project, but I'm sure I have faith that it's coming. Yeah. I mean,
yeah. It's yeah. So it's like connection and community. Like that seems like what
success. Oh yeah, that's right. You asked me about success. Yeah. See, this is why I'm like, did I answer your question? Because I'll just like, even when I take Adderall, my ADD is like dee 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 dee, and it's like,
trust me. Oh, also, maybe we should talk about, oh man, ADD and being a creative and being an entrepreneur. I don't know if you want to go there, but that's something I've been thinking about a lot lately.
Let it rip. Yeah, it's something I'm still, I mean, making lists help. Mm-hmm. You know, schedule. I still though, I'm very much a kinetic learner, so I like to write mm-hmm. things down, but I realize how gnarly that can be. I need to incorporate my like handwritten calendar and using the phone calendar on Google. That's why I love hearing about what successful people do. Cause I'm like, oh, maybe I can incorporate that into my thing somehow.
But it's interesting cause you know, really ADD is such a, it's a different mapping of your brain. And I find, and I have a hypothesis that a lot of creatives and like mystics and those types of people have ADD, just the way that their brain is mapped.
For sure. Yeah. Like I have two friends who are lawyers and I love them dearly. And my friend Janelle, ever since high school, like we'd get an assignment and she'd fucking do it. And like if the assignment wasn't due for 2 weeks, 2 days later, she'd have it done. And I'm like, wow, man, that's like next level shit, you know? But then she's always like, oh, I'm so proud of you. You're in New York, like doing your thing. And I'm like, I'm drowning over here. You know what I mean? So it's all relative. I for sure. Yes. My two lawyer friends are and I have more than two lawyer friends, but all my lawyer friends for the most part are very like analytical and don't need, you know,
yeah,
they just get it done. And I'm like, you know, but
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's such a, like also anyone who is a woman, like there's different types of ADD, like inattentive ADD is what I've tested for. And it's not ADHD, which is very typically male, mm-hmm. Like, and show outward signs and little boys and, you know, fifth grade get diagnosed with that. But a lot of women who internally, like it can be a very lonely and internal struggle because until you realize that's what's really going on, most likely no one's going to diagnose you, especially if you're functioning or even highly functioning.
I didn't want to cut you off.
Yeah, go ahead.
It wasn't until high school and like high school algebra that I was like, what is this, man? And I'd like go to tutoring, like, you know, after school, like office hours, tutoring and all this stuff. And then finally my teacher was like, Irene, I'm pretty sure you have ADD. She goes, please get tested so that I can legally give you more time on the tests. And I told my mom and she was kind of like, I have it too, deal with it. Mm. Cause she's super Rambo about some shit. I love her. It's like gnarly. I love her, but you know, I think she kind of like, my little brother's autistic and she's like, I don't know if I can handle two. And I think she was also scared because that was back when like you'd fart and like, I mean, it's still kind of the case, but I think she was weary to have me get diagnosed and then I'd be put on pills. And then, do you know what I'm saying?
No.
So I think she was kind of like, and she definitely has it for sure. And now we're both open about it, but I think she was kind of like, hey man, just white knuckle it. But when I take, I mean, I do notice a difference when I take Adderall because I just get more shit done. But I also don't want to, I kind of appreciate her outlook because I don't ever want to be dependent on it. And I do just, again, it's like why I do lists. And like, you've taught me tremendously that like, yeah, man, you can't do so much shit in one day, you know, and how to like reframe. Because my old to-do list would be like, it would be like 10 things. And like two of those things are like hyper, like very like, it's like, okay, that's the first two are probably going to take you like the whole day and you just earn a lot longer than you realize.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know.
That has been like one of the biggest things for me too, is like, because there's also some kind of programming that is like, if you're like with the list making, for instance, like only putting 2 to 3 things on your list per day is like good. And then you can have like your bonus section of like, if this happens, you know, like to, if I happen to have time, I can go to my like bonus section. But the thing is like with the list making, and I still struggle with this because I'm an ambitious person and right. I know you are too. So it's like, yes, I want to, you know, maximize and strategize and, you know, get as much done as I can. But what we're doing is we're setting ourselves up for disappointment, right? So like, and energetically, I know we've talked about this before, energetically, if you have 2 things on your list and you get them done and you're like hyped, like I did everything on my list today, I did it well. Notice the type of energy you have.
Right.
Right. Versus I have 10 things on my list and I only got 2 done. I'm a failure. I don't like, I can't believe I'm going to have to do all these things tomorrow. And then it's a draining energy. It's like shame and guilt all over the place. And it's like not useful, you know, but it's a habit. It's a pattern that we pick up, especially if we're used to maybe doing things differently or slower than other people, maybe neurotypical, you know, humans, right. then we're actually used to that program of like, I need to do something that will make me feel behind, that will make me feel like go to this place that is familiar. So it's like, definitely it's one to work on with the subconscious and programming and stuff, but it's huge. It makes a huge difference.
Totally. I mean, you've helped me tremendously with that. Like you telling me like, we can only get like tops 3 things done in a day and then your bonus list. It's funny because you said that. And then there's this girl that I follow on Instagram who's like hyper successful, or at least presents herself to be. And then I really appreciate when she's like, oh, I did this thing, but it actually took me 3 years. But the way she does lists is every day. And I've tried doing this and I haven't been able to do it every day, but she'll list like the book that she's reading, a podcast that she's listening to, music that she's listening to. Then it's like what she's grateful for, who she's sending love to, what she wants to feel that day, which is that just right off the bat, even though she never talks about mysticism or any of that kind of stuff. It's like, girl, we see you. You know what I mean? And then she kind of talks about like, oh, I like crystals and I do eucalyptus stuff and whatever. But she'll do, she breaks down her to-do list into must get done. Like it has to get done, you know, like you got to pay your rent or whatever. Those are 3 things. And then to-dos is just like you said, bonus stuff. And then if you can get it done, you get it done.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I had a question about also tying it back to mysticism here. I know your background and your roots are from Cuba, and I know I've heard you tell a few stories about your grandmother and some really mystical things. And I wonder if that's kind of where your interest in using unseen forces kind of started. But yeah, I'd love to know more.
Sure. So I was raised Cuban Catholic, and like, you know, my old joke is like Cuban Catholic is like Irish Catholic, but with subtitles. Like it's very like old school and hardcore and religious. Growing up Cuban, there's a lot of like, obviously like Santeria is like a part of our culture. Mm-hmm. And if you're not familiar with Santeria, when the Spanish conquistadores came to Cuba, a lot of the people of the like Yoruba tribes from Africa wanted to keep practicing their religion and like honoring the different deities. But what they did is they intentionally hid the deities under Catholic saints so that they could keep practicing. So San Lázaro is Chango, and I think like Santa Bárbara, like all there's certain saints that actually have like that are just like masks for the different deities. And so that's what makes up Santeria. So while I wasn't, you know, while I was raised Cuban Catholic and we didn't practice Santeria, there was always like, I was always taught to honor and respect santeros, people who practice Santeria. And like, I always, you can always see they're like dressed in all white, either if they're a priest or priestess or if they're getting initiated. And then there's also like bracelets. Again, I feel bad. I know that like the yellow and kind of like key lime green is for a certain god or deity rather. You know, there's all red. I feel bad. I used to be a lot better with it. So that was a big part of, I remember being young and being like, oh, that's not our religion, but that's theirs. And we should honor and respect it and not fuck with it. What I thought was interesting was, something that my family does is if you lose something, you pray to Saint Anthony to help you find it. And so Saint Anthony is like the saint that helps you find lost things. And so the way my mom does it is she'll be like, oh, Saint Anthony, like, please help, you know, and she kind of just says it like to herself. She's not like in the middle of the house, like Saint Anthony. but she'll be like, oh, Saint Anthony, like, please help me find this thing. I'll put like a dollar in the poor box. And so now we have an ongoing joke that he really just like fives and tens, like you got to offer him like $5 or $10. And that's so inherently mystical without outright saying like, this is a mystical thing. But obviously like money is an energy and a currency and all that. So I always thought, cause I was like, that kind of goes against like the very Catholic, like, oh, duh, 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 you know, and it's like, you're kind of like, let me get a 5 or 10 for so I can find my keys. And then a lot of Cuban girls, they'll get a like a prayer card of Saint Anthony and they'll put it upside down to help them find a partner. Mm. Which I think is so interesting and funny. And then as I was telling you before we started recording, Saint Jude is the patron saint of impossible causes. And so my family, to drag me and like make fun of me, they've given me his prayer cards and that little statue just to kind of like help me along my way. Oh, and then that's right. There was this other thing. So something that I think is very interesting is my mom and my grandmother never like taught me this. And I don't know how I came to know it, but when someone, and I've only done it for myself once, but if someone is upsetting you, you kind of like write their name on a piece of paper and put it in the freezer and it doesn't hurt them. It just kind of like, people have said it, like it puts them on ice, which sure you can think about it like that. But I kind of just on Facebook one day joking around, I was like, man, this one person's pissing me off and I'm about to put their name in the freezer. And what's funny is all these like Jamaicans and Dominicans were people from the DR were like, oh my God, how does she know? Bah, 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 bah. And I was like, oh, I didn't know this was like a thing. And then apparently Dominicans will put somebody's name in a little bowl with like oil or vinegar or one of those things. And I'm like, oh, this is like a cool thing. But yeah, so I think, without like consciously analyzing it, I think those kind of like mystical rituals and things definitely shaped my understanding of like you do kind of need help from, I don't want to say the beyond, but it's nice to know that there's like other energies at work and that you can tap in and be like, hey, can you help me find this if I give you $5 for the poor box? You know what I mean? So yeah.
Totally. Yeah. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
I'm like, I hope I landed that plane.
I feel like these are traditions, and it's really great to hear, you know, what kind of shapes your landscape and the understanding of that there is more, you know. And I think everyone to some degree has an understanding of that there's more out there, whether you're overtly very spiritual or you're just aware that, you know, we're not totally in control here. There's a whole other unseen orchestra happening that if we're willing to, we can tap into if we have the right guidance and skill set, we really can tap into it. So I wanted to ask one last thing. I know we're coming up on the hour. And I think this is something that a lot of entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, creatives, people who are getting ready and starting their businesses and starting to work for themselves have struggled with. And also there's this kind of idea out there, like on social media, in mainstream, that like you have to quit your job to become this, successful thing. You have to go 100% in. And what does 100% look like to people? And I want to talk with you because, like, despite you're on Amazon Prime, you travel around, you tour on comedy shows, you do stand up, you have you're recording, you have a podcast, you are a successful comedian, and yet you also choose to have a day job. And that seems to bring, I'm curious to see like how that has played into your development and like given you what that's given you.
Sure. I still have a day job because my comedy career at the moment is not able to pay all my bills in a consistent manner yet. And I was having this conversation with a younger comedian, I've been doing it longer than he is. And I told him, I'm like, hey man, you don't keep your day job. What's crazy is I know so many comedians who are so established, and it's so comforting to know that they held on to their day jobs a lot longer than you think they would have, you know, like I know these two female comedians that are like so established and all this stuff. And they're like, oh yeah, I just quit my day job like 3 or 4 years ago. And I'm like, oh man, cause you've been crushing it for like 6 or 7. So, but I think it's important to have a day job while you're building up, you know, whatever endeavor you're choosing to focus on so that you don't stress yourself out. I'll just use myself as an example. If I made it that my only source of income was comedy, I'm again not at a place where comedy can pay all my bills, then I would just be a permanent stress ball and I'd be a bummer and comedy wouldn't be fun anymore. You know what I mean? But I have this day job that I intentionally chose that doesn't stress me out too much. I'm basically a secretary at a bank, and I'm always very honest when I go into job openings. I'm like, hey, I'm going to crush it during the day. And then at night, I'm a comedian, you know, and everybody's been great about it. And what's nice is, yeah, I can buy myself a Diet Coke and not be like, oh, well, and getting back to my friend, he was so stressed about like, oh, I did the show and I only made $200 and da, da, da. And after, you know, and it's like, yeah, man, like that, it's just going to wig you out. So the nice thing about having a day job is you can pay all your bills. You can hopefully start like setting money aside so that at one point, yes, you can get to a point where comedy or whatever your thing is paying all your bills. But until then, do both. And it's definitely tough, but do it because it's worth it. Because again, you wouldn't want to put so much stress on your dream if your dream isn't able to fund your life at this moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just know that you're working towards, you know, and keep that positive outlook of, because it's also absolutely a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, I see so many comedians who are so miserable, and I know that's kind of our thing, but it's like, yeah, man. Okay. You know, also I kind of love that we're taking a departure from that, but it's like, if you're constantly a bummer, like, it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, I can focus on the fact that, like, oh, I'm not, you know, if I didn't have a day job, I could probably produce more content, but it's like, you know what? I have to figure out how to do it now. And like, because mm-hmm. when I don't have a day job, I'm sure other things will be, you know what I mean? Like, new levels, new devils. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think my advice to people is like, don't be ashamed of it. Hold on to it. Let it fund your life until you're at a point where, fortunately, your dreams can fund your life.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I think that's, you know, like, I think a lot of people need to hear that. I don't think it's the only way. I do think, you know, like, there obviously, for different people, there are different ways that they can enter the scene. But I do think it's a really important way. And like, for me too, I used my photography business that I had before Silver and Citrine and before what I do now to help fund what I do now while I was getting it off the ground, because it's like, it's too much pressure on one thing. And like you said, you really want to allow it to unfold in the way that it wants to. So especially if it's a creative project, there's different fields that, like, yes, you could just go in, knock it out, build this thing, sell it online, of course, you know, but I'm talking about, like, specifically creative fields. And so it's really good to hear that. And I think a lot of people, like, just removing the shame and guilt around it is super important. So I know we're coming up to an end here on the hour, and I want to ask you our set of questions, our show end set of questions. Are you ready?
Ready. Shashi and I are ready.
Are you ready? First question. What is one of the most magical things that's happened to you? So a pivotal, like, synchronicity, something that that really has stood out to you as being just like, wow, that was just pure magic, and yeah, it sticks with you.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about it earlier, but just that, you know, kind of putting it out there into the universe that I wanted to move to New York in 2014, and then my thought was, hey, universe, I'd like to move to New York. Fall would be cool. And then the universe was like, hold my beer. And I literally got a phone call that's like, if I got you a job in New York, would you move?
Right.
Which is better than I could have ever imagined. And it was the perfect retail job. It was at Barney's. Like, I helped Julia Roberts and Bruce Springsteen. You know what I mean? Like, it was super rad. And that's a pivotal point in my life where I'm like, oh, magic is real. Like, this is, or whatever you want to call it, or like being cool with the universe and like not being an asshole. Like, all those things are important and real.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And so we're going to fluctuate between magical and practical. What is your, and this can be a magical thing too, but the question is, what is your greatest investment in your business to date?
Oh, I mean, am I allowed to gas you up right now?
Yeah.
I mean, truly, Jen, it's the work that you and I have done together that you've helped me. I think something that really, like, knocked me on my ass in the best way was when, and correct me if I'm saying it wrong, but when you did the past life regression,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you were like, do you have a question for your guides? And I was like, am I on the right path? And the fact that my guides laughed at me, it's like, of course they would laugh at me. Of course they would laugh. Of course I would ask a question that is laughable. And of course my guides would be like, you little dingbat. Yeah, doggy, you're doing it. It also felt so cool and so moving when I kept having that recurring dream of, like, not being able to speak. And then that you were like, oh yeah, man, like back in the day, like you were like leading a group and you got a little bit, I was like too powerful and they drowned me. I was like, oh, that's what it was in the dream. Like, yeah, I was being, because if you scream underwater, nobody can hear you. But yeah, and that's all you, baby girl. Like that kind of, you know, you hear about that stuff, but you made it so accessible and you were so like patient and beautiful and gentle and understanding. And you know what I mean? Because I live a lot in the practical just to get by. So when I can like, the work that I get to do with you anchors me within the mystical realm, and I'm just eternally grateful for it.
Thank you.
Yeah, truly. It like makes me better overall the more I understand myself. And I think, you know, it's cool to understand like, oh, I have ADD, but it's also cool to understand like, oh, why are you having this reoccurring dream? Oh, because of a past life regression where you were too powerful and got drowned.
Yeah. And you feel it, and you feel the energy. Like we do a lot of energy work in our sessions together. You know, and when you release energy, it's like, yes, we talk about what's up here, but we only do that so that we can get into the energy field. And it's like, that's actually the most practical thing you can do for yourself, because it changes the way you operate.
I physically feel lighter. You know, what's crazy is Jen knows, I was just home in Miami and people kept telling me, oh, you look smaller. Mm. And it's like, I'm close to the heaviest. Like I'm not weight wise. Like I'm not, you know what I mean? I'm kind of closer to like the heaviest I've ever been, but people kept telling, like they would look at like my waist and like my hips area. And they're like, are you small? Like you're smaller. And it's like, kill me, I've gone to heaven. Like that's who, you know, I'm a woman in the 21st century. I always want to be thin, but yeah, it's wild. And I, yeah.
They're responding to a sense of lightness is what you're, yeah.
Yeah.
A sense of light. Mm-hmm.
And after people, sessions, I'm lighter for sure.
Yeah. It's interesting that people, this isn't on a tangent, but like people respond, like a common thing that people say is like, oh, have you lost weight? Look how thin, but it's actually not really about that. It's just in our culture, we have this skewed thing that like, that is actually a compliment. But what they're, a lot of people are trying to do is just say, you look great. You know, it's so interesting. But yes. Okay. Thank you for sharing that. Couple more questions. What's your favorite unseen force to work with?
Meditating for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it really, sets me up for the day when I'm able to do it in the morning. And if I do it at night, it kind of like helps me power down. And it's wild. Even before you and I started meeting, my therapist could tell when I hadn't meditated, because I'd be like, oh, I'm so anxious about X, Y, and Z. And she's like, when was the last time you meditated? And I'm like, damn it, Willa, you're good. Cause it had been, you know, 2 months or two weeks, but it really helps anchor me.
Yeah.
And makes me slower to anger, which is good for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then one last question, a piece of magical advice and a piece of practical advice for the audience.
Ooh, okay. I think a piece of magical advice is to just like, listen to your gut.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And to just go with the flow and know that as long as you're doing what you think is right, you know, and just be nice. Don't be an asshole. I think I'm giving you like three now.
Go for it.
Or maybe that'll be my practice. So my mystical one is like, you know, trust the process and go with the flow and like, listen to your gut. And I think my practical one is like, don't be an asshole.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like we're all marching towards death. And I think the kinder you can be, it's just better.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a bummer that not more people operate in that. or they view kindness as weakness, where it's like, nah, man. Mm. Usually the people who are the nicest have seen the gnarliest shit, you know? And we're coming from a place of like, ugh, we've been to some deep, gnarly shit. Let's just be cool and nice.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Just be kind. Timeless. Timeless advice, Irene. Thank you. So tell us a little bit about what you're working on now, where people can connect with you. You have an adorable dog right now on the screen.
You're inspiring me to start back up my podcast.
Right.
So thank you for that. My podcast is Dear Nana Advice from an Idiot. It's currently on iTunes. I hope to get it on Spotify like Jen's. I am most current on my Instagram. I don't know when you're going to release this, but I'm performing tomorrow night at New York Comedy Club. I don't have a big project coming up, but I'm trusting the universe. And I know that the perfect project will come at the perfect time. I have a website, but I am not as good as I should be on it. So Instagram is Irene S. Morales or Irene Smorales on Instagram. And you can just holler at me there. Call me a little freak.
Oh, and are you still selling the merch?
I will be doing another run of my merch.
Okay. Yeah.
As well. And that'll be announced through Instagram. Yeah. My little freak stuff. I want to add Troppy Goth to the mix.
Amazing.
But yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Irene. Thank you for being here. I'm so excited. Thank you for spearheading and really pushing, helping me to really get this podcast up and going. And I appreciate you dearly and the work that we do together and who you are and what you create and what you put out into the world. And I am just so excited to see the continued growth and journey that you're on. So thank you. Thank you for everything.
Oh, baby girl. I feel the same way about you. I couldn't be where I'm at today without you. And the world needs to hear you, and the world needs to like interact with you in as many ways as possible. So I love your Instagram, but yeah, you couldn't not have a podcast.
And here it is.
You needed it. So thank you so much for having me. I love you. I there's not enough words for how grateful I am that you're in my life.
Same. Thanks, Irene. Thank you guys so much. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider doing a rate and review. I know everyone asks you to do this, but it really does make a difference so that more ears can hear this message and so that we can connect further and on a deeper level with more people. So if you go to wherever you're listening to this podcast, give a 5-star rating. If you're feeling really great about it, a review would be amazing. And I so deeply appreciate it. And thank you for being here.